Welcome to this edition of the Kingdom Driven Family. I am your host, Andrea Schwartz. All too often, Christians want to adopt or end up adopting a formula mentality. If we just do this, all good things will happen for our family. The problem with that is people aren't formulas. People are people, and they interact with their environment, and they interact with their sinfulness, and they interact with other people who are sinful. And as they go through life in the process of sanctification, there are times when there are definite bumps in the road. And the problem with trying to apply a formula approach is that we end up thinking that we really don't have to think anymore. We just apply this approach and everything's going to turn out fine. Well, my guest today is somebody who grew up in a situation that most of us would consider ideal. She was from a Christian family. She was homeschooled. And yet, she took some seriously bad turns in her life that resulted in outcomes that not only were not beneficial for her, but caused some grief throughout the rest of her family. But I'm not sharing this story because it has a sad ending. I'm sharing the story because it has a very redemptive ending. So listen in to the conversation I recently had with Shanna Samuel and hear how God took the things in life that weren't positive and turned them into a real blessing. I think you'll enjoy it. Today, I'm speaking with a young woman who is proof positive that if you have made mistakes in your life, rather than throwing in the towel and saying, you know what, I've done too many things that aren't good, why would God bother with me? My guest hopefully will disabuse you of that perspective. So without further ado, Shanna, thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
All right, so I'm just going to let you dive right in and start telling your story. And if I feel like, well, let's get a little clarification on something, since I know you're not remiss in sharing your experiences, we'll just kind of see where it all goes.
Yeah, I'm definitely an open book.
We begin by you setting the stage of what most people might consider a hopeless situation and showing how God likes to take those things that man might say, this is a losing situation, and redeeming it wonderfully.
I was raised in the church, and my parents had very high standards for the way that we were raised and how we were supposed to behave with members of the opposite sex. I wasn't allowed to date. We had a courtship model that we were going to put in place, but it just fell flat. We moved out of state and relocated to another, you know, area that we were unfamiliar with. And I lived in a Bible Belt previously where there are a lot of churches. So we moved into this little town where it seemed pretty desolate in the way of having any Christian friends or anything. So I pretty quickly turned to other friends, and I was desperate for companionship. And so I wound up getting married when I was 19. I got married the first time. I was 3 months pregnant with my daughter. It went from a bad situation to a really terrible situation quickly, and the marriage was over quickly, and I went into party mode, and I was just overall very lost, and I had turned my back on God, and I just really felt like I could do whatever I wanted, and I could come back later on if I wanted to, and it would be okay. So when I was 21, I met my second husband, and we had a very fast, furious relationship, and we ended up getting married. We decided that we were going to have a baby together, and that was about a year after we had met. I wound up pregnant with my second daughter, and he lost interest in me and couldn't handle my morning sickness and the like, and even though he already had children, it wasn't his first ball game. So he met someone else at work, and our marriage fell apart, and I was 11 weeks pregnant and moving back in with my parents. My daughter was 3 and a half, and it was just a very dark point in my life, and I thought my life was over.
Now, were your parents receptive to helping you? Did they demonstrate any anger towards you because you had lived your life so contrary to the way they had raised you?
You know, it's amazing. They were really given a lot of grace and peace from the Lord, I think, because they were going through a lot more than just what was going on in my life. They were also going through a lot with my siblings. We all basically grew up being really good kids that did no wrong. And instead of each teenager in turn having their little rebellion that most kids go through in the real world, we all kind of went crazy all at once. So my parents were pretty much drowning in a bunch of stress related to the kids.
Were you the oldest? Were you the middle? Were you the youngest?
I am the oldest, and I have a brother and a sister. My parents, they came to a point where they were not treating their children anymore like they were Christians because they were not showing fruit in their lives. So they had to love them with the love of an unbeliever and not hold us to the Christian standards because they did not count us as Christians. Although my mom did say that she recalls that I never stopped claiming that I was a Christian, but I was wanting to do my own thing. So she did keep rebuking me and she kept just kind of getting on me. But once I was married to my second husband, they just kind of moved on and they tried to accept it and love us and just keep presenting the gospel in a very loving manner. You know, there was no Bible beating or anything like that, you know. And
so let me see if I have the picture straight. You've been married twice, divorced twice. You have two children. You're back living at home. Were they loving and caring towards your children, even though these children came about in a way that wouldn't have been their first choice?
They were always very accepting of my situation in that manner, because so many people end up not having, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. There are so many people that have no support, and the children are punished for the sins of the parents. And my parents were never like that. Once I got married the first time, they got over it. They moved forward. They showed us love. We actually did go to church for a period of time. My daughter, we had her baptized in the church. And we were trying to set up that belief system for her, but it fell flat because I didn't have a spiritual leader. And he was just playing house. He was playing church. You know, so my parents were always supporting us. And they always showered my daughter with love, and they were very protective of her. And they were like a second set of parents for her. And, you know, I was a single mom for a long time before I was married the second time. And I had my own apartment, but, you know, my parents took my daughter every weekend, and they saw her frequently, and she loved them, and we were very close. They have always been an influence in her life. They trained her to sit in church. You know, they were taking her to church when I wasn't going, and I wanted her to go. Definitely the second time was harder to come home because I had messed up again, and I knew I was at the end of myself. I knew what I was doing wasn't getting me anywhere in life. Everything crumbled all around me, and I'd had a moment the previous summer. I think I'd been married for about 4 or 5 months, and I had a friend who sent me this link to a song. And I didn't listen to it for months and months. And I listened to it this one day, and I was just feeling very down in the dumps about my life and what I was doing and how I had basically gone against anything that my parents had ever, you know, raised me to believe. And it was like that point that God was pricking my heart. And I can remember listening to this song, and it kind of destroyed me in a way. And I feel like the scales fell from my eyes, and I wasn't in denial anymore of the life I had chosen for myself. And that was kind of when playing house stopped for me, and I started realizing that what I was doing was going to have serious repercussions in my spiritual life and in my daughter's life. And you know, and I made the best of my situation, and I was a faithful wife. When everything fell apart, I called my dad up, and I say, "Daddy, I got to move back home." I said, "He's kicking me out." And my dad was just like, I said, "I have nowhere to go." And he goes, "Come home, baby." He's like, "What do you need?"
Sounds like the prodigal son.
Absolutely. And I think that's how they've approached every one of their children. And it was hard because my sister was coming home. So prodigal daughter returning number one. And then I'm, you know, coming back, and they didn't expect that. So they're focused on my sister. And here I come along, you know, and I've got my daughter trailing behind me, and I'm 3 months pregnant, and it was beyond anything I ever thought would happen to me. And It was a very devastating blow, and my sister didn't handle it well. She was not happy initially that I was moving in because my parents were involving her in like house hunting and stuff, and they very deliberately left me out of everything because they're like, this isn't about you. This is about what we're doing here. You're kind of piggybacking on us. You know, we weren't planning on this. So they ended up buying a house that I think is like 2,200 square feet and had 4 bedrooms. It just, everything fell together really quickly. And it was just very clear that that was where God had put them in their lives to be a support system for their children and to take me in. And I was very grateful for that. And I got to a point where I was very depressed and really heartbroken over everything that had happened to me. I just felt very, very much like there were no real men out there in the world anymore who actually knew how to take care of a family and nurture a wife and be a, you know, a head of household type. And so I was very skeptical that there was really a nice guy out there. And I was very lonely. I didn't have friends. I lost all my friends. I knew that I needed to change everything about my life. So anything about my old life, I was just trying to make it go away. And so I remember one weekend, I hopped on the computer. And at this point, I've talked to my mom. I've told my mom, I said, all right, that's it. I need you to tell me set these boundaries for me. I want to be in submission to what you guys expect from me. I want you to be in control of my dating life. Don't let me date for 2 years. My head is not screwed on straight. Please give me guidance.
Was she willing to do that?
Yeah, and it was both of my parents. So, you know, my dad, I was submitting to my dad's authority and taking my mom's advice. And my mom just, she's like, you need to go to church with us and you need to surrender yourself to the Lord. Clearly, you have no control over your own life. This is all God, you know, just encouraging me to open my Bible back up. And so for the first couple of weeks that I was with them, I did nothing but listen to sermons online and read my Bible. I didn't sleep for about 2 weeks. I was having horrible nightmares. And so I was like just repeating scripture in my head as I was trying to sleep until I would fall asleep. And then one day this is going to sound like a total plug to eHarmony, but I definitely got on eHarmony.com one day and I made an account, and it's very involved to sign up. And I just decided I wanted to start talking to people I would never meet in person, but would just start getting to know people to see if people that called themselves Christians were actually Christians.
So how did this fit into not dating for 2 years going on eHarmony?
I know this is going to sound really strange, but I actually had no intent of dating anybody I met on eHarmony, but I was so tired of having no friends.
Okay.
When I split from my first husband, I had just turned 21. And I basically would go out partying and drinking and going to clubs. And that, you know, that's where I had my friends. Well, God kind of took that option away from me by the fact that I was pregnant. I was like, well, I'm not going to go out and party and drink and, you know, and do all these stupid things when I'm pregnant. I need to be responsible. And so I guess I rationalized that, you know, it would be okay to just talk to people online, especially in a super controlled setting where you can really control like tight settings on eHarmony, because if you're strict about a certain requirement, you know, if the person's a Christian and denomination or whatever, you know, you can actually set those standards and they won't send anyone your way to talk to that's not within those boundaries.
So your parents were okay with this?
No, I didn't tell them.
Okay.
Yeah. I was I think the word was manic that they used on me.
So you're on eHarmony and what happens?
I started talking to a couple people, just emailing back and forth, telling them my story. I had made a full disclosure, you know, about the fact that I wasn't looking for a relationship. I was just looking to make friends. I was in no sort of mental state for a relationship. And I even disclosed the fact that I was pregnant. I had a few people that were interested, but I kept telling them that I was there for just a pen pal kind of thing, because I literally talked to nobody. And I didn't want to talk to anybody that I knew because they just kept saying, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about 10 days into eHarmony. I ran across Colin's profile. I read his description and he said that he was in seminary and he was working at Arby's and he was doing this and that. I kind of sat there and was like, really? This would never work. I am not even close to the kind of person that someone in seminary needs to be with. And I don't even think I want to talk to this person. So I basically deleted him. Like, I was like, no, I'm not going to talk to this guy. Forgot about him. About 3 days later, I had a friend request from someone I didn't know on Facebook and didn't recognize the name, and I didn't know the profile, and his picture wasn't a picture of a person, so I just accepted his friend request so I could read up on him. I'm reading through my profile, or his profile, and I see that he's in seminary, and it starts clicking with me that, oh, this is the guy I deleted. And then immediately he pops up and starts talking to me on Facebook. And so we discovered that the denomination he was in, I asked him, I said, so you're in seminary? He said, yes. And I asked him, what denomination are you that you're in seminary? And he said, I'm in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And I go, oh, the OPC. I grew up in the OPC. So then we have everything in common because we basically have the same background.
So I have a question, and I'm sure other people would have this question. Since you had made full disclosure, and since you had sort of made it clear that you weren't interested in a relationship, and since you were anticipating that you were connecting with people who were far away, I'm sure he must have told you why he was interested in somebody who would seemingly be unqualified by her own admission.
I remember one of my initial questions to him was, did you read my profile? And he said, yes. I said, I'm pregnant. And he's like, I know. I don't care. And I just, why? And he actually told me, he said, we talked online for a couple hours, and then I gave him my phone number because I liked talking to him. And he called me about 2 seconds later. And then we talked for 2 hours, and he actually at that point told me that he had gone through a divorce himself, and when he had been talking to his pastor about joining eHarmony, because he actually talked to people, he was a little more he took accountability more seriously than I had, I guess. Okay. And so his pastor told him, you probably want to look for somebody who's similar to you that has probably been through a divorce or something of the like, because you're going to be able to relate to each other better. And so he actually took that to heart, and their church was actually very encouraging of single men marrying single mothers. And so the church took it very seriously. So they're very encouraging, cautiously encouraging of people marrying with children already in place. So it was actually a really neat thing. I've never known a church to do that before. So he was very open to it, and We hit it off. We talked on the phone for a long time. And
was he in the same geographical location you were?
No. So I'm sitting there in Reno, Nevada, and he's in Detroit, Michigan.
Wow.
So I think that's about 2,000 miles.
Well, you got your safe distance.
See, I was being smart. No, through it all, Colin was very cautious. And I remember getting off the phone with him, laying back on my bed and just kind of doing that whole the deep sigh thing and going, I am in so much trouble. And I told my sister about him. And then my sister told my mom. And my mom was very unhappy with me. And then Colin friend requested her on Facebook. And they were talking. And she just said, just so you know, if I don't like you, I'm going to make you go away.
Well, that's honest disclosure.
Well, she didn't think we had any business talking, and she was probably right. But the Lord had different plans for us. Thinking back on it, it's still one of just the most crazy stories I can think of.
So give us a time frame. How long ago did this all happen?
We met July 16th, 2010, and we were married December 3rd of that same year.
And I imagine once you had decided that this was your intent, since there was a baby on the way, that probably had to factor into the decision as to when you were going to do things, correct?
We decided initially that we were going to have a 2-year long distance relationship, which fell in line with, you know, not with me not being in a relationship for 2 years. I don't know how I rationalized that. But so we went from a 2-year time frame to a, I think a 12-month time frame to like an 8-month time frame, and it just kept getting pushed back and back and back. I mean, almost to the point where I was getting afraid because it was going so fast. So we just kept moving it around, and I think we settled on February, and then it just kind of all became really real when I realized the whole point. Actually, I don't know who realized this. It might have been my husband realized that the whole point was we're going to have two kids. My oldest daughter was 3 at the time, and she had already been without a father before and experienced a stepfather, and it was, she just didn't have a solid structure for her family life, you know, living with grandma and grandpa. It was great, but it, you know, it just wasn't within the realm of a normal family. So, and then thinking about having a baby and the fact that, you know what, I want you in the delivery room. Is that okay if we're not married? Obviously, the rules are a little different with certain things, but at the same time, it's like, why would we deprive this child of having a parent immediately in place for the sake of waiting a little longer for a wedding? We kept moving the date back, and we finally decided we were going to get married on December 3rd.
And then when did the baby come?
9 hours later.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so now we're in 2014. And from the picture that I see online, there's another little person that has made his way onto the scene.
My son is 1.5 years old, and he is our first child together. And I was, you know, we had a really rough transition into marriage, and I wasn't certain I wanted to have more children. You know, based on everything I had been through previously, you know, I had some abandonment issues. The Lord had other plans for us. I ended up pregnant, and it was, you know, the first month or two, it was a little bumpy for me because I was just terrified he was going to decide that he couldn't handle it and he was going to leave me. So he stuck around and he stepped up. I was very sick, and I think I laid in bed for 3 months, just about. And not every day, but most days I was laying in bed.
This is during the pregnancy or after the delivery?
During the pregnancy.
Okay.
My husband, he would work 40 hours a week, and he worked outdoors. He worked in the heat, and then he would come home, and he would cook dinner. He would give the kids their baths. He would do the, I would wash the laundry, but he would fold the laundry and put it away. And, I mean, he ran the whole house, and he had to cook everything. And I had to hide in our room when he would cook because it smelled so gross to me. Our relationship grew so much stronger through that experience, and we've bonded so much over our son, and it was actually a really wonderful experience.
Okay, so I have some questions for you, and I'm figuring if I have these questions, people listening will have these questions also. Okay, so first of all, if you can, you've identified the mindset that you had that said that you were going to cast off the training and the exposure you had to Christianity growing up.
Yeah.
If you were going to speak to girls today, the age you were back then, what would you say to help them through those difficult times and not to make similar errors that you made?
I would definitely say that you need to listen to the wisdom of your parents. They're not out to get you. They set rules in place for your life because they love you and they want the best for you, and they want to make sure you don't go through the hurt that maybe they've experienced or others around them have. So definitely, you know, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. My parents told me that when I was, you know, 4 years old, and I say it to my children now, and I lost sight of that as a teen. You don't automatically know everything just because you come of age.
What was your schooling like?
So I was homeschooled my entire life, and I grew up in the country. I don't like saying I was isolated because I wasn't isolated, but I was definitely not as free to go hang out with friends as a lot of other people were.
Now, do you consider that a positive or a negative?
It's a little of both, because I can remember being best friends with my siblings until I hit high school. And then when I hit high school, I wanted to have friends. I wanted a group. I wanted a crowd.
Okay, so what would you say to parents how to deal with that phenomenon? Obviously, when people make the decision to homeschool, they're doing it for reasons of not putting their children in situations where they're exposed to things that aren't consistent with Scripture. But it ends up being sort of a catch-22. So you protect your children from this bad environment, but then they feel isolated and they go out looking for what they consider a normal life. Based on having lived through it, what would you advise parents in terms of how to mitigate the trade-off that happens with a homeschooling situation?
Well, I mean, you're putting these protections in place over your children because you love them, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't tell them about life, you know? I mean, you're going to experience turbulence no matter what, but I think that you need to just focus on having open lines of communication about everything so that you can talk through certain issues that might be more difficult. And I definitely found that, and I love my parents dearly, so if they're listening, but I found that a lot of topics were taboo, so we never talked about them. So it almost seemed like it was something bad. And, you know, as a sinner, you're attracted to what's bad because you want to know why it's bad. So I feel like have a healthy view of the world around you to where you can discuss it comfortably with your children.
So it sounds like your takeaway from this is explain to your children why you're doing what you're doing, and don't try to hide from them the fact of sin. Discuss what sin is, explain how it displeases God, and then make it so that your children can ask you questions so that there aren't off-limits topics.
Yep, I would say so. We definitely need to have those harder conversations with our kids. Just because we're trying to keep them away from the world doesn't mean they're not going to end up out in it. We have to prepare them for the world. We can't hide them from it.
And I've always advised parents not to hide your past transgressions from your children. Make your learning experience something that they can learn from vicariously, that they don't have to do it. Because I know a lot of people think, if I tell my children that my husband and I had sex before we were married, they're going to think it's okay. Well, the only way they would think it's okay, if you frame it that it was okay.
Absolutely.
If you explain, this is not the way God says to do it, this is what I did, and let me show you the negative consequences from it, now you're teaching them.
Well, you're not just slapping a hand and saying, no, don't do that. You're saying, don't do that because that will burn you.
Right.
You don't want to always have to reason with your children why you're doing something or not letting them do something. You know, like my son wants to go in the kitchen and he wants to pull the big hot pan of food on his lap because he's hungry. But I have to go in there and I have to correct him and tell him no. But I'm not just going to say no. I'm going to say no, that's hot. It will hurt you. And then he accepts it and he's okay with it. He's not happy that he's still hungry, but at least he's not burned.
Right. And I think another thing is to differentiate between the moment of correction when he's trying to pull the pot down and having to say no, and then when there is no hot pot on the stove and you're sitting there and you're discussing things like obedience and listening to your parents, then that becomes an example of, okay, like remember the other day when I said, don't do this? That's why. And you might even let him, when it's not terribly hot, I want you to feel what this feels like. And he says, ow, that hurts. Okay, that's what was going to happen if I had allowed you to do it. And then every moment in family life becomes an instructional moment.
I actually experienced a miscarriage with my first pregnancy before my oldest daughter. So this is way backtracking in the story, but I had to sit down and have this long conversation with my parents about how I was sexually active. They were still choosing to believe the best of me, even though I was staying out until 3 o'clock in the morning, that I wasn't having sex with my boyfriend. And then I had to drop this bomb on them that I was pregnant. And clearly it did not go well, but we couldn't even, when I was growing up, we didn't talk about sex. I didn't want to, first of all, because I was embarrassed about it. And my mom didn't force the issue. And I can remember her trying to talk to me about sex. And I didn't want to. I didn't want to talk about sex. I didn't want to talk about puberty. I wanted to be a kid forever. And so my mom just handed me a book one day, and I read the book. And apparently I was only supposed to read the part of the book about girls going through puberty, and I read the whole book, so then I found out about all the functions of sex.
So here's another thing that I'm wondering what she would think on this, because your story is going to be of most interest, I believe, to parents right now, saying, what can I learn from this young lady's experience so that my family doesn't have to go through this kind of turmoil? And what's really been prevalent in a lot of homeschooling circles is this idea of formula living. If we read this book and do what this person says, it looks like their family's all fine, so our family will be all fine, as opposed to having real-time family situations and anticipating the fact that your children are going to be tempted, because temptations between the world, the flesh, and the devil, there's enough to go around, that to convince yourself that a daughter who's staying out to 3 a.m. really isn't getting into any trouble is a bit of a fantasy world. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I would say that thinking that there's a formula for, if I do this and this, that my kid's going to end up in, you know, with this kind of a lifestyle, like, I mean, for many people, it will work out because that is what God has ordained in their lives. For other people, God has ordained a lot of trials for their lives, you know, to grow them in the faith and to teach them life lessons that you would never hope to go through, but you learn to appreciate them for sure. And I feel like the Lord has led me through these trials for a reason, and I have come out the better for it. And I have a wonderful husband, and I have three beautiful children.
From what you're saying, it sounds to me like the experiences you had are not for naught, and God delights in working all things together for the good for those who love him and those who are called according to his purpose. So instead of hiding your background, using your testimony to proclaim God's redemptive plan in your life and to encourage people not to listen to the lies of the enemy that says, you are so messed up and you've done so many things in your life that are bad, there's no reason to even try to change because it's impossible.
Right. And, you know, I initially thought, man, my life is such a horrible mess. What man worth marrying would ever look at me? And I felt that way for so long about my husband. Just, you know, he's such a wonderful, godly man, and he just gave the gospel to me over and over and over, and he lives and breathes it every day. And I wonder still, like, how did I end up with such a wonderful man? Well, we're still sinners in a fallen world here, and it's just the grace of God that he has plucked me up out of the plight of and mess of my life and put me into such an amazing life that I had always wanted, and I don't deserve it.
Well, those who have been forgiven much are grateful. Like all of us who have situations in our past that not only we regret and wish we hadn't gone there, we sometimes still experience the ramifications, and all the more reason to work to stay on the straight and narrow.
Right. I've said before, if my story helps just one person in my lifetime to keep them from doing the same things that I did, I feel like what I went through would be worth it.
God has made you an articulate young lady, and so you're able to frame it, but you frame it without excuse, and you frame it without, well, but these are all the terrible things that happened, this is why I did it. It sounds like you have embraced the idea that you're responsible for your sin, and you're also responsible for your sanctification in as much as it's not a big mystery. How is it that you please God? By living according to his word.
Right. I think that's exactly right.
Well, thank you, and I'm sure that your words will help more than just one person. They've already helped me, so I'm already your one person. the idea that we have to live in the present, we have to have the law be the environment in which we live, and even when we stumble, that's the way out.
Yes, and I definitely think we need to keep in mind that we need a good balance of law and grace.
And by law, what I mean is, what does God say? And I'll do it his way instead of my way, as I like to tell people, because he always wins.
This is so true.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate your openness and your willingness to share.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Join me again next time for another edition of the Kingdom Driven Family.